This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to play an interview with John Cusick, who is a wonderful, wonderful literary agent in New York City. And the reason I'm playing this tape again is so that you can hear what he is looking for in young adult fiction. This summer is very important, I think, for children. They really need to be reading. I was so happy when David Baldacci was on the program 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about his foundation, Wish You Well, which is an organization that he has put together to give books at food banks for children, for adults too, but specifically he wants children to have books to read, because it's fine to give people in need food, but they also need food for the brain. And so David Baldacci has started this foundation with his wife, Michelle, and they're doing just wonderful work. I think they've already distributed over 2 million books at food banks. He also developed a storyline called Vega Jane and a series of books for young adults, again, with the idea that it is so important that young people start reading, because as he explained, his mother gave him, when he was young, to keep him busy, actually, probably keep him quiet for a little while, she gave him a notebook. And because of that notebook, she said, write something. And he started writing. So he was writing at a very young age. And he found that joy on paper, that wonderful feeling. If you haven't done it, if you haven't actually written something, and it can be the simplest thing, the simplest little story, you just cannot appreciate how wonderful it is to see your words on paper. I get so angry sometimes when I think about how in schools there's so much of this joy of both writing and reading is knocked out of kids, because you are told to write about something that you're not interested in. And to be, to have that germ of an idea in your head, something you want to write about, that's when you really can feel that comfort of whether you're typing or whether you're writing it by hand. And many people write by hand. You know, it's funny, people will say, oh, I need a computer, I have to, you know, have a computer. But somebody like Douglas Brunt, he was always running around because of his job at airports. And he didn't want to pull out his computer, you know, for a 15-minute wait in an airport. So he just kept a yellow pad with him, and he would write. And he wrote his first book right there on a yellow pad. And eventually, you know, he started seeing how the words looked on paper. It started to get excited about it. And eventually put it down and, you know, in a computer, and it was pretty amazing. And that's his book, Ghosts of Manhattan, which is one of my very favorite books. So, you know, you don't need any equipment. All you need is pen and pencil, or if you have a computer, a pad, a tablet, because Philip Vega, who wrote Last Exit to Montauk, did it on a tablet. So it doesn't matter how you start, but just start. Put the words on the paper, a story that you want, even if it's just one paragraph, and then sit back and say, yes, I did that. I actually could write a paragraph. And then say, well, I've done a paragraph. Now let's throw in a little dialogue. And you start. And that's how you start. And it's so exciting. And I so admire people who have other jobs, other occupations, who never even thought about becoming a writer. Suddenly, this germ of an idea, this little spark that you have in you says, I want to try. And I had on the program the other day another person who did exactly that. And Neil Mullick wrote this book. It's his first book, and it's called Dark Blossoms. And I was so impressed with it. You know, I get a lot of books. I get so many books. You're at the studio, and sometimes looks at it, and he says, piles and piles of books arrive here for me. And it's really exciting for me to go through all the books. I really need to be on 5 days a week because I have so many books that I want to review. But I take the books, and I start, you know, I never look at the back cover. I never look at any of the information that publicists send me. I never have any idea what I'm going to be reading. And the truth is, I never actually read the prologue either. I just start at the first chapter. So I open the book and I start at the first chapter. Usually I can tell if the book is going to be any good by the third page. If I'm, you know, sometimes it's the first page. Sometimes it's the first sentence. It's funny, when I was reading Jill Block's book, The Truth About Parallel Lines, I read the first sentence and I said, oh, wow. Oh, wow. This book is going to take me on a trip and I am going to enjoy it. And that's, you know, it was just something I said, whoa, Jill Block is a great writer. And that was also her first book. And another author that I interviewed 2 weeks ago was Professor Robert Castor from Princeton University, a very famous professor, very scholarly, intellectual, and he was so sweet. He read a poem in Latin for me. But again, I read the first sentence, the very first sentence of his book, and I said, oh, I love this guy. I knew I would love the book. But usually I can tell, you know, I give a book a try. I'm not, I don't, you know, just go for the first line. Although if sometimes it gets me, that's it. I know I'm going to enjoy the book. But usually in the first, certainly the first chapter, I can tell if I'm going to like the book, if it's something I'm going to want to suggest that you read. And so when I got this book by Neil Mullick, Dark Blossom, I started reading it, and within the first few pages, I said, this is something special. I actually didn't know anything about him. His name is interesting. Last name is Mullick, which isn't a very common name. I didn't even know what nationality was, what, you know, anything about him. But I knew after the first three pages, I said, whoa, this is something special. I'm going to enjoy this book. And I settled myself down and I just started reading. And it's actually a very short book. It didn't take me very long. But I thought, wow, as I'm reading it, I thought, this is really good. It's a little bit of a suspense, a lot about human nature, about tragedy, about love, there's so much in this book. And so I'm thinking, you know, this is really great. And so when I discovered that it was his first book, it impressed me even more because I discovered that not only that, I mean, it's not only his first book, he wrote it. He's wrote it as a first person woman, psychologist. And I was, as a matter of fact, when I started reading it, I thought it was written by a woman. So he managed to capture the voice. He managed to really just bring his characters to life. And so I thought, this is really fantastic. Then I discovered that he is actually from India. Of course, he lived here many, many years in the States, and he went to school here at Carnegie Mellon. He's actually a you know, very brilliant businessman. So I was impressed that, you know, with all his work, all the things that he's doing, there came a day where he sat down and he started writing. And he came out with an absolutely, it's suspenseful, it's intriguing, and it's just a wonderful little book. And I do hope that you will get it. I think that there are times when you have to just sort of go outside of your normal reading and pick up a book and say, I want to understand, and sort of, if I can imagine myself doing this, could I actually, do I have this story in me that I want to tell? And certainly Neil had this story, and he's done a beautiful job. And he's, you know, it's funny, when you write your first book, it's never easy. And even when you're with a major publisher, you have to promote your book. And I was very impressed with that. See, this is when you have a business background. You think of things outside the box. And that's what I'm telling all of you. When you write a book and you published it yourself, not that this book was had a publisher, but if you publish it yourself, or if you're, you know, even with a big publisher, think outside the box. How can you promote your book? How can you get it noticed? How can you get yourself noticed? Because it is important as an author to brand your name. Your name is the product. You want people to, when they hear your name, when they see your name, to immediately know that you've written a good book, so that they'll go back to you every time they're looking for a good book. And I've advised many, many very famous authors on how to promote their books, how to get noticed. And they always come back to me and say, well, I never thought of that, or my publisher never thought of that. Whether it is if for example, you have a character, an Elvis Presley character, and you're going to be doing a lot of book signings. To have a life-size Elvis Presley character next to you is wonderful, because then you get noticed. Because one of the things that happens in these book fairs where you go to sell your book, there are so many people, and it's sometimes very difficult to get noticed. And one thing about selling your books at a book fair or a convention is that for indie authors, the money is all yours. You're not paying, you know, giving anything away. So you make a nice profit when you are able to sell books at these kind of events. But you want to be noticed. So you have to think outside the box. Think of something that you can use out of your book, out of your life, that will attract people. And now, so Neil, being a businessman, he came out with a very clever idea. And I think that it's something you might want to get involved in. And it's called Win Trip to NY, to New York. Okay, Win Trip to New York. And he has a website. And if you read the book, and as I said, it's a little book. It's not a big book. I think he told a story and made it just the right length. Because sometimes, also, this is another thing that happens. Sometimes authors are encouraged to write a certain length of book. The fact is, a book has to be the right length for the story. It's like you could tell Tolstoy, well, you know, keep it down to 90,000 words. It doesn't work. Or like David Baldacci was saying, now, David Baldacci's young adult books are long. They're not short. They're 400 pages. And, you know, J.K. Rowling's books, some of them are very long. And, of course, they were all advised that a young adult, young people can't, you know, don't have the attention span, so keep it down to 65 to 75,000 words. Well, that's not true. If a story is great, the kids will read it. And if it's 400 pages, they'll read 400 pages, 500 pages. And as a matter of fact, I was talking to one girl at Sunday school, and she's reading David Baldacci's Vega Jane series, and she said, well, it's not long enough. I want it longer. So, you know, this is important, and I want you to just have a look at Neil Mullick's website. It's called Win Trip to New York. And he's offering, it's something experiential, a competition, and you can win a business class ticket to New York City. And it's based on discovering something about one of his characters. So go there and find out the details. Now, I'm going to play another interview before the bottom of the hour. I want to play another interview. And this one is with Raymond Arroyo. Raymond Arroyo is a fantastic, fantastic author. And his series, which is the Will Wilder series, he's just come out with his third book. I'm going to have him on the program soon, but I'm going to, in this interview, I'm talking to him about book two, which, since it's Passover, is about Moses. And so it's a fascinating book, and I just want to read one little promo for this series. It's now three books. And Mary Higgins Clark, who, of course, has been on Joy on Paper many times and is the queen of suspense, says this about Will Wilder. She says, "Will Wilder is a brand new, refreshing, entertaining, intrepid young hero who magically combines humor and genuine suspense. And I love Great Aunt Lucille." So I, with that recommendation from Mary Higgins Clark, I want you to listen to this interview that I had with Raymond Arroyo.
And hi, Nancy, how are you?
Okay, I'm fantastic. And I'm just so happy to have you on my program. For all of my listeners, Raymond Arroyo is really, you are one of my favorite interviewers because you do such wonderful interviews. And I am so thrilled when I discovered that you are just a fantastic writer. And the Will Wilder series is really so wonderful. I think you have inspired children with this series.
Well, you know, it's been amazing, Patsy, and I thank you for that praise. The Will Wilder series it's touched so many hearts. I mean, not only kids, but I have adults. I have 80-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 50-year-olds. I have college kids writing me who are reading the book. You know, so it shows you the market for this type of material. People are looking for an escape, but a safe place where they can understand the world around them, go on a historical wild ride, have a little adventure, and come away feeling fuller. I think, you know, there's other fiction that sort of drags you into the doldrums, or, you know, there's murder mysteries and other things that sort of accent the darker side of the world. These books, I think, ultimately lift and inspire, even though it's a supernatural thriller and it's a 12-year-old protagonist encountering relics and antiquities and historical items that you can find in the world. It really has tapped a core with people, and I've just been amazed that the children have taken to it, the literacy it's inspired, and the way it's become an event for family. I've had aunts and uncles and grandparents and parents reading it with their children and having amazing conversations that they then let me in on. That, to me as an author, is such a gift.
Well, that is such a wonderful thing that you are able to bring all of this together. The stories are exciting. Hero Will Wilder is just, he's a fun character. It's taking us back into sort of our childhood for older readers who read it. And for younger readers, it is just, you could just go off with him to adventure. And this new book, where you are talking about missing the staff of Moses in a really fantastic little mystery. I love this book.
Oh, well, I'm so glad you liked it. I'll tell you how this started. Will Wilder 2, which is a sequel to the first book, because it is an ongoing series. I'm writing book three now. Will Wilder 2, The Lost Staff of Wonders, does, you know, point to the staff of Moses. And the reason I came up with this, I was in London, and there was a professor in a very interesting article who was making the case that the staff of Moses, the historical staff, was in a museum in Birmingham, England. And I did a lot of research on this particular part of the Birmingham, England collection, and found that it's a 3,000-year-old staff with Egyptian hieroglyphs on the side. And what I discovered there is that there's another museum in Istanbul that also claims to have the staff of Moses. So I didn't just make this up. It's not some fable. There are museums that actually claim it. And I thought to myself, whether it's, you know, really in either of these museums or not, I loved the idea of having the actual staff of Moses in the Perilous Falls Museum in the middle of the town that Will Wilder and his family lives. And what if Will were inadvertently responsible for this staff going missing? And what if the plagues of the Old Testament suddenly started pounding the streets of Perilous Falls and threatening not only Will and his family, but his whole town and maybe the world? And then I layered in a plot of an ancient evil rising that Will alone can sense but can't see. And it makes for a great story. I mean, I've been fascinated by the kids who've already read it. It's only been out for a few days, and they've already burned through the book. They're wanting book three. I'm like, kids, take it easy. Read slower.
No, it is. The thing is, you bring in the story of the plagues, of course, and that makes it really exciting. And for children who, you know, aren't getting all that much history, that they get this really in-depth, you really explain, you know, the period and explain about Moses, and it's a wonderful way to get children interested.
Well, you know, I love writing any book, but I love writing fiction because it allows you to emotionally explore the world with characters you love. And with Will, I thought it important not to have an orphan or an abandoned kid as my protagonist, but a boy who was surrounded by his family, by his great aunt Lucille, his mother and father, his sister and brother, so that the family goes on an adventure together. And once I had committed to that, it allows you to go in all sorts of directions. And our personal history and the history of our civilization is wrapped up in these items, these historical items, these relics, these antiquities. And I thought, if I can awaken kids to the wonder of that, because I find them so fascinating, I will have done my job. And so many kids go on almost scavenger hunts to the Getty Museum in L.A., to the Cleveland Museum, to the Miami Museum, or the Metropolitan in New York, or the Louvre or the Vatican. And they snap pictures and they send me notes about the relics that I mention in the book that they see in the museums around the world and in the libraries around the world. So to awaken kids to that history is such a gift and a joy for me.
I think it's so wonderful when you can touch the heart of a child and get them enthusiastic. I was so happy when my boys were younger, of course, was the time J.K. Rowling came along, and that to see young people could read and get enthusiastic about a book. And now for you, you're carrying on with this by bringing in a story so well written. The important thing, what people sometimes don't realize, that to capture a child's imagination is a real art form. You have to be a good writer. It's not, sometimes people will say to me, oh, well, you know, I'm going to write a children's book first, because, you know, that's easier than a book for adults. And that's not true, because you really have to have this enormous ability to step into a child's shoes, to see the world from their point of view. And I love that you have this entire family. I think that's...
you're writing in two levels. I mean, I love the great books of children's literature, like Treasure Island or Kidnapped or The Jungle Book, where you can go back. And you, when you read it as a child, you come away with one story and one impression. When you read it as an adult later to your own children, it's a very different experience. And I wanted Will Wilder to have that that glow about it and that sensation when people encountered it at various ages. And that's what's happening. Families are reading it together. Kids want to read it. And, you know, I learned a great lesson from playing video games with my son. Video games, people say, why are the kids, they're addicted to video games, they're not reading anymore. They're not reading anymore because the stories are really good on video games. The kids aren't playing the game so much as they're following a narrative, and then there's a cliffhanger, and they have to play through the game level to get to the solution for the story to continue. So I figured, if I can create a series that has propulsive energy, a plot that really moves, that the kids could get emotionally involved in, and that had major cliffhangers on every chapter, several, the kids would keep flipping the pages. And that's what's happening. So it was designed that way, but you're right. It takes art and real craft. I'm glad I've written a number of adult books, because I never would have been able to create this universe or write for children without it.
That's exactly what I always said, that this takes such a talent. And you have written, the Will Wilder series is fantastic for children and for adults, because Any adult will love the story. You have depth. You have layers of knowledge in there and information, so that it has this fantastic depth, which will make it a book that one can read many times over and years later. I'm just so thrilled.
Oh, that's very kind of
I'm
you.
So thrilled
well,
to...
My, that's, that is my hope, and I see it. I've gotten so many letters from librarians and teachers and parents, and the children themselves. You know, kids, when they read a book, they take the character to heart. They don't hold it at arm's length like an adult. And what we don't realize as adults, what we don't consider, when you read a book as a young person, and if you think back to your own life, fiction is used as a tool to understand the world we're in, our place in it, and even to make the mistakes that the character in the book makes. So we learn those are areas we shouldn't go in or directions we shouldn't go in as we grow. It becomes a tool of survival. Stories are powerful things. And so in writing the Will Wilder series, and particularly the Lost Staff of Wonders, I wanted to incorporate all of that, the wisdom of the ages, the adventure of youth, and how we really need both to go forward as whole people. And I think Will gives a gift to readers of all ages. To the young, he imparts real wisdom and a sense of history. To the elder readers, he imparts that youthful excitement and adventure that we began with and that we should end with as well. So I love that it appeals to all generations and that it's a multi-generational cast.
Raymond, you've done a fantastic job. I just want to tell everybody it's called Will Wilder, The Lost Staff of Wonders, and it's a wonderful book for the entire family.
Well, thank you so much for that. And they can go to RaymondArroyo.com, Raymond, A-R-R-O-Y-O.com. We have all the information on the book there. And there's also a contest. Not only does Will Wilder's family get to go on an adventure, but we're sending the readers' families on an adventure. We're going to choose one family to go on a four-day trip to Orlando, Wilder adventure of their own. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, and that's
fantastic.
You can register
there. And you don't have to buy the book to do so. You can just register at RaymondArroyo.com. The link is there.
Okay, and I'll send that information out on my newsletter and put it on my website because it is a fantastic read.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you having me on. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much, Raymond. And again, I always look forward to your interviews. Our class interviewer, you know how to interview
you're very
people.
Kind.
Really
you're
brilliant.
Very kind. Well, after 20 years, I'm getting used to it, Patrick,
well,
so I'm getting there.
No, you do. You're so brilliant.
You're very kind.
Just wanted to tell you that, okay?
Oh, you're very kind. Well, thanks for having me on the show and for letting your listeners know about Will Wilder.
Thanks again. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. A suspenseful, insightful, and beautifully written story, Margaret George, New York Times bestselling author of The Splendor Before the Dark, a novel of the Emperor Nero, is talking about Antonius, Son of Rome, by author Brooke Allen. Here's the buzz. After young Marcus Antonius's father dies in disgrace, he yearns to restore his family's honor during the final days of Rome's dying republic. Marcus is rugged, handsome, and has abundant military talent, but upon entering manhood, he falls prey to the excesses of a violent society. Through a series of personal tragedies, Marcus must come into his own. Desperate to redeem his name and carve a legacy for himself, he refuses to let warring rebels, scheming politicians, or even an alluring young Egyptian princess stand in his way. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Start reading Antonius, Son of Rome by author Brooke Allen today. For more of my suggestions on the books you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And in a moment, I'm going to play an interview that I had with John Cusick. The reason I want to play this again is that he is open to authors who have written books for middle grade and young adults. And he's always looking for something special. And he wants a diverse range of books. So, and if you have a book that you're working on, or if you've finished one and you're looking for an agent, I would suggest that you try John. He's just an absolutely adorable guy, very sweet. And how you contact him is he's at Folio, which is one of the best agencies. And it's John at Folio Lit, folio lit.com. And if you put in the subject line the word query, and send him the first 2,500 words, he will read it, and he gets back to people pretty quickly. So if you have this, as I was talking to Raymond, and we were talking about how very important reading is for children, but that when you are writing for children, it is not easy, because children, even adults will sometimes read a book, even though they say, oh, it's not that great, I'll go ahead and do it. But children are very critical, and if you don't capture their interest, they won't read it. So you have to have this special spark, which reminds me of another author who has written for children, and it should be on everybody's book list for the summer, is Jackie Minetti's One Small Spark. It is set in the Revolutionary War, and it's a little-known story about a boy who played a critical role in the Revolution. Again, this is an example of a children's book, a middle-grade book, that has been written with so much intelligence and depth that every adult will enjoy reading it as much as a kid. And this is something that all of you should think about. You know, your kids are never too old, actually, for you to read to them. It's amazing, even as they get older, that they enjoy when you read to them, when you read a chapter, or if you alternate, you know, you read a chapter, if you have a bunch of kids together over for a pizza, have them read a chapter out loud. Kids like to do that. Kids like to, you know, be appreciated as you know, having some intelligence and knowing something. And so there are so many ways that you can get kids involved in reading and get them off of all of this electronic stuff that really holds them back from learning and from developing. So now I've recommended so far today David Baldacci's Vega Jane series, Raymond Arroyo's wonderful Will Wilder series. And there are three books in the series now. And I tell you, each one is absolutely delightful. The one with the number two, which is The Lost Staff of Wonders, which is about Moses. It's very funny because, you know, when the river runs with blood and sharp-toothed frogs surround Will Wilder's home and clouds of swarming gnats choke the streets, it's funny. This is a laugh out loud series, and the kind of series that you can read to your children or have them read to you. You can sometimes just say, oh, I just feel like laying here drinking my iced tea. How about reading me a book? They like to do that, and they enjoy making the sounds and just hamming it up. And that's part of the fun. So if you've written a book for middle grade or a young adult, I'd like you to check out John Cusick. But we'll listen to his interview first, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to recommend a book for adults that every adult should read. So let's go ahead and listen to John. Hi, John.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, great. Well, it's so good to talk to you. You know, one of the things that really I enjoy so much about doing this program, I get to talk to so many best-selling authors, which is always just fantastic. So when I talk to somebody like Mary Higgins Clark, and it just gives me a thrill. But one of the things I really enjoy is finding new writers who are just starting out. You know, I think you just have, like, one of the best jobs. You get paid to read.
It's true. I absolutely love being an agent. I got into the business sort of by accident. I knew I wanted to work in publishing when I got my start. And the first job I got happened to be an intern, sort of a personal assistant for a kids book agent. And I realized pretty quickly that this was one of the best jobs in the world. So I absolutely love it.
You know, when you find somebody and you can help them start their career, it must be very fulfilling for you.
It really is. You know, I think, you know, the book business is a business like any other, and it has its ups and downs and stresses and whatnot. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a great feeling to know that you are working with creative people and helping to sort of build their career and readership. And you know, I mean, one of my favorite things in the world to do is to be able to call one of my authors and say, oh, you know, we've got an offer on hand. We've got a publisher who's really interested, you know, and they know that their book is going to sell and that it's going to be out there in the world. I mean, that's a really wonderful moment.
Oh, it is. It's so exciting for them. And when you know, of course, it's a process. Of course, Folio is a major agency. And I know that they get thousands of queries. How many queries a day do you get yourself?
I get between 15 to 30 queries a day, and that's, you know, 7 days a week. So it's a pretty large number. And
it's a daunting task just to read them.
Yeah, it certainly is. The fact of the matter is there are just so many writers out there who want to be published, who want to make a career out of it. I think especially, you know, since the advent of books like Twilight and Harry Potter, you know, the kids' book world is something that's on a lot of writers' radar for the first time in the past few years. So, you know, it is an incredibly competitive atmosphere, certainly.
Oh, it is a big market. And sometimes people don't understand that they're not just because they're for young people, they're not less brilliantly written.
Oh, absolutely.
And when they find an author, well, like when they found J.K. Rowling, that was it. You know, everything just was like magic after that.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, the writing in YA or young adult versus the books for teens and middle grade, which is sort of that age range from about 8 or 9 up through about 12, you know, these books are at times incredibly complex and tackling very mature issues, very big real world issues. So it's certainly not a place where the writing is any less complicated or nuanced than, say, in the adult world.
Now, thinking of reading 200 queries, most people, when they write a query, I mean, they've worked pretty hard on that. They know what they're doing because, you know, I'm sure you can spot the ones who haven't put any work into it, and those get dumped immediately. But so many authors do spend a great deal of time. Can you tell when an author, just from the query letter, can you tell that they're talented?
I mean, you know, I would say when I'm reading a query, there's a couple of things that I'm looking for. Obviously, you know, is it a professionally written query? You know, is the writing right there in that query letter is sort of coherent and professional? Did they follow the submission guideline? That's sort of the first thing that I'm going to notice. And the second thing I'm going to see is concept of the book that they are pitching me. And one of the realities of the kids book market is oftentimes very concept driven. Publishers only have so many slots on their list. So each book really has to earn its place on that list by being unique in some way. So I'm reading to see, okay, is the idea they're pitching me something that I think I sell based, you know, purely on that idea? Is it original? Does it sound compelling? Are there high stakes? You know, and that's the same holds true for a, you know, really beautiful literary coming of age or a romance or a sci-fi adventure. That rubric is still true no matter the genre. And then if the concept sounds like something that's really exciting and compelling, go on to the sample pages and see, okay, and is this person, you know, is their craft, is their line level? level writing polished enough? Is it something that I can really work with? So those are the sort of three things in that order that I'm reviewing when I look at a query. You know, the other part of my job is that when I take on a project after working on it with the author, you know, I'm sending it to publishers, sending it to editors that I think would be a great fit for this particular novel. And so I sort of am writing my own version of a query letter in that instance. You know, it's sort of it's a submission letter. It's a pitch and describing the author and the project and why, you know, I think that this is a perfect book for this editor and this imprint. So, you know, I definitely did my share of query letter writing when I was younger, and now it's sort of evolved into a different form of query letter writing, you know, at the editor level.
You have an amazing client list of really brilliant writers, and I know that each of them loves you to pieces. I'm sure of that. Now, where can people find you?
I would say, if you're interested in submitting to me, go to Folio Junior. That's Folio, then JR.com, which is the website for the kids book department at Folio. And there are submission guidelines and sort of taste profiles for all the agents at Folio Junior, including myself. And you can click on my picture and see, and you know, you can see how to submit to me there through that website.
Okay. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me today. I think you just do a wonderful job with your clients. It's an amazing list of writers. You're so famous in the business as being one of the one. No, really, you know, when I talk to people, because I would say I want somebody who's really, you know, at the top doing young adult, and your name always comes up. I'm just so thrilled.
Thank you so much.
I'm so thrilled that I got to talk to you. So
you too.
Okay, thanks again, John. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye bye. Okay. Well, I really enjoy talking to John, and I hope that if you've got a book, check out his website. He's just a very sweet guy, and he, as I said, he does get back to people quickly, and it's what you have to do. You have to get out there and do the queries, and so just go to his website, John Cusack, and check out the requirements, but it's really very easy. Now, I also wanted to say, you know, I was reading Mary Higgins Clark's recommendation for Raymond Arroyo's series, and I was amused when she said that she loves, you know, great Aunt Lucille, who is the librarian of supernatural things in Will's town. And it's always wonderful when a character just pops out at you, one that you absolutely will never forget. Of course, you know the star of the book, but when a character like Aunt Lucille pops out at you, that you never forget her. Once she has so much personality that you can't forget her, and it reminds me Carol J. Perry's aunt. She has an aunt in her book, Aunt Ibby, who is a computer whiz and also a librarian, not in a supernatural library, but just a regular library. And again, a wonderful character. And I know that when they someday do a television series of Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mystery series, that there will be a lot of actresses, let's say of a certain age, who will, you know, fight tooth and nail to play Aunt Ibby, because it is just such a wonderful character. And another character that I love, in this case, it's the mother of the main character, and that's the Dowager Duchess in the Peter Wimsey series, and that's his mother. And she is an absolute, I mean, once you read a Peter Wimsey book, you never forget the Dowager Duchess. And years, I mean, 30 years after you read the book, you still can remember her, you can picture her, and she just puts a smile on your face. So that's why authors out there, when you're writing your book, think very carefully about the other characters in the book, the small characters, what people might call it, the bit actors, because they are very, very important to the overall just feel of your book, that you have a sort of that touch of humanity in the simplest character, whether it's a waitress, whether it's the the Uber driver nowadays. We don't have cab drivers very much anymore. But the character, if you put some personality, some humanity in that character, they do live on, and it's wonderful to see that. And certainly in the Will Wilder series, everybody will remember Aunt Lucille. Again, I was going to, you know, this is sort of a day to recommend books. I wanted to recommend a lot of books for kids for the summer. But I also want to recommend a book for all of you adults out there. Everything is crazy in the world. We all feel like everything. I think everybody I talk to, they say, oh, I don't know, I can't take anymore. I don't know what's going on. So I'd like to recommend a book. It's you know, sometimes people will say, oh, well, it's a nonfiction book, or it's too difficult to read, or it's sometimes they'll say it's written by a professor, and it's not, you know, it's going to be a boring read. But it, for example, I just had Professor Robert Castor on, and he wrote a book called The Appian Way, and which is absolutely a delightful book. It's a story about his trip with his wife on the Appian Way in Italy, and he made it. Although he, you know, he's a professor, so of course he's going to throw in a lot of history there. But it's fun history. It's history that you will really appreciate. History that will stay in your mind. Things that you sort of know something about, but you don't know a lot of details. And he puts in the details in a fun way. And so I highly recommend that. And if you're planning a trip to Europe and you want to not go to the main cities, because sometimes the main cities are just, especially in summer, they're too crowded and too noisy and too hot. Get out and go outside of the cities. And the Appian Way, the journey from Rome to Brindisi, is absolutely fantastic. My husband and I did it on our honeymoon, and we loved it, and it was wonderful. And we met a lot of real Italians, old-fashioned Italians, who were just absolutely fantastic. But the book I want to recommend to you now is called Mao, The Unknown Story. It is the story of Mao Zedong. It is now, I would recommend that you get the Audible version. It's by John Halliday, and he is a scholar, you know, and he wrote it with his wife, who is Chinese, Zheng Chang. It's full of facts. I'm going to tell you right away. But when you're listening to this book, and that's why I suggest that you listen to it first. Then maybe you want to read the hardback version, because then you can, you know, get all the correct spelling of the name and everything in your head. But it is so interesting. It is so fascinating. And today, I mean, we are all involved in the whole political situation in the world. And so much of it, of course, revolves around China. And the truth is, most of us in school, we learn nothing about China. We know nothing about China. And we certainly do not know the kind of details that are in this book called Mao, The Unknown Story by John Halliday. It will open your eyes. And in a wonderful way that you'll say to yourself, wow, I didn't know this. You'll say to yourself, it depends on your age, whether you're older or middle age or whatever, you'll say, I never heard this. Nobody ever said this. And it's very important as we are looking at China today, where Mao is back in the forefront, where he is a hero again, where people admire him, that we actually know the true story of Mao Zedong. And his sort of reach, his long reach, is still having an impact on our world today. So if we can understand, sometimes you have to take a particular character and understand them. And in this case, if you understand Mao, you understand China, and you understand the ramifications of everything that we're doing politically, and why it's so vital that we, perhaps it would be a good idea if we learn from history. as Churchill wanted us all to remember, that if we don't look back, if we don't have a grasp of what happened before, we are going to miss the boat. We will miss so many things. And today, it's Mao. You really, as much as we all want to say, what's going on in this world? If you want to know what's going on in this world, go back and get the audible version of Mao, The Unknown Story. Listen to it. And I would listen to it in bits and pieces. I wouldn't even necessarily start at the beginning. You can take any chapter, and it's so fascinating. And just go back. You'll find yourself going back and forth, listening to chapters over and over, and just saying to yourself, why weren't we ever told this? Why didn't the press ever report any of this? Why didn't we understand how many people were dying and how many people? It's just amazing. Until you read, well, in this case, listen to this book, you can't really grasp the situation. And if you want to get away from the news on television for a while, take this book and just sit and listen to it under a tree. And it can be very painful listening, but you will enjoy it in the end because you will, of course, John Halliday is one of the greatest historians. But so he writes it in an intriguing and fascinating way. And I hope that you will get it because we have to start understanding what we're hearing. And that's the best way is if we go back and listen to this book. Okay. Again, please go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. I have my 4th anniversary interview up there. It was just a wonderful time. I had a wonderful time talking to Andrew Grant and his wife, Tasha Alexander. They were absolutely delightful, and I was so happy that they were my 4th anniversary guests. Also, I'm going to put up a reading list of summer books for kids, and I hope that you'll go there and make sure that the kids in your life have books to read. And, of course, a lot of National Geographic books because they are so much fun and they really get kids involved in reading and also in activities. So I will list those too. And go to my Facebook page and like me and I'll like you because I guess we still have to do Facebook. And that's, you know, that's life. We're stuck with Facebook. Okay. Anyway, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be made into a film, streaming video, or perhaps a television series, or even on the stage, because I think Jill Block's book would be perfect for the stage. So you never know. You never know. Anyway, and say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything you do for me. You're so sweet. He's saluting me, and I'm saluting him because I like to salute. I wish I had been a general. Okay. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye now.